I started to make a distinction between what was alive and what was dead, because we're all made of atoms. The rocks are made of atoms, the trees are made of atoms, metals are made of atoms, and yet some things are clearly alive and some things are not. And once I made the distinction between a rock and a living thing, I began to realize that living things had souls, whereas tangible, non-living things only had atoms, which are controlled by the strong nuclear force and the weak nuclear force. Now, I don't wish to cause any anxiety to listeners, okay? So we're not going to get very technical at all tonight, and I'm going to go very, very slowly, because it can be understood by anybody with a loving heart. What's happened over the years is ego-driven maniacs have tried to confuse ordinary members of the public with their expertise.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to confuse them by trying to boost their own ego, and the only way they can do that is to try to make others think that they're clever. Well, let me say from the beginning, I'm not clever, I just love you. That's the difference. And this is how we're going to make the progress. Now, one of the analogies I like to use is that of a swallow flying through the branches of a tree. Now, if we look at the swallow flying through the branches of a tree, it's absolutely beautiful. It can fly through those branches at 100 miles an hour. And, of course, a swallow has a brain the size of a pea. So, clearly, it's not the brain of the swallow that's making it fly, giving it that dexterity and that talent.
Right.
It is the energy, the godly energy inside the swallow, which enables that swallow to perform the feats it does. Now, once we realize this, and we realize that rocks are made of atoms, which are made of the strong force and the weak force. And at this stage, don't worry about what these forces are. This is what researchers have come up with over the last... It's very recent. It's only 80 years since we discovered what the atom was. So sit back, relax. Don't get anxious, because if you can add up to 10 and you know your ABCs, you can understand every single word, every single inch of ground that I'm about to cover.
Maurice, why is it that so many people have failed over the last 300-plus years to try to figure out this gravity enigma?
It's because they've been looking in the wrong place, basically. They're trying to say, well, in the first place, in the simplest sense, we say, We observe what's going on around us. This is what Isaac Newton did in 1687 and thereabouts. He looked up at the moon, and he noticed that when the moon was in a certain position, the tide was high. And when the moon was in another position, the tide was low. And so he scratched his head and figured, well, the moon must be pulling the water up and down. So there must be a force between the moon and the Earth. He then noticed, and you'll notice, of course, George, that just a couple of days ago on the full moon, we had an earthquake.
Yes.
That the moon's gravity is pulling the Earth's crust, and we get more earthquakes and tsunamis at the times of the full moon. The tsunami in Indonesia on Boxing Day a few years ago was again at the time of the full moon. Newton also noticed that when the sun and the moon were aligned, then the tide was even higher. So he scratched his head and thought, well, look, the sun must be pulling the water, and the moon must be pulling the water. They're both pulling in the same direction, so the pull is stronger. He then sat down, and he did some experiments, and he figured out that the force of attraction between two bodies, two planetary bodies, was proportional to the masses, or in its simplest sense, the size of the two bodies in question. But that's a very simple explanation of the mass. But what he was saying is the bigger the mass, the bigger the gravity. So if you have two big objects, they pull towards each other with a greater force. And he also noticed during his experiments that the force diminished if the objects were further away from each other as in proportion to the square of the distance between them. So it decayed exponentially. It wasn't a straightforward, if you moved it twice as far, it became half as much. It wasn't like that. It was more logarithmical. And then he sat down, scratched his head again, and thought, well, what could be causing it? And it perplexed him as it perplexed all others. And he tried to look for some kind of force that might be doing it. And, of course, he was way ahead of his time. And it wasn't until the 19th century, when we started to learn about electricity, that we had any possibility of finding out what caused gravity. And we then moved on to about 1920, the 1920s, and the British physicist Ernest Rutherford discovered using various experiments at Manchester University in England that the smallest unit of matter he called the atom. And using his experiments, he decided that the atom was comprised of 20 it was comprised of positive charges in its center, and that every different material on Earth had a different number of positive charges. And this is what distinguished one thing from another. Paper has a different number of charges in its atoms than water, for example. And of course, paper is made up of various chemicals. The chemicals are made up of various elements. The elements are various molecules. The molecules are made up of these very basic building blocks, atoms. So Ernest Rutherford decided that the smallest particle was the atom, and from the atom, everything else was constructed like Lego. If you add all these bits together, things get more complicated, and we see the world around us.
Maurice, had Isaac Newton had known about the atom, would he have adjusted his theories at all?
He would have adjusted his theories, but Ernest Rutherford made one or two slight mistakes, and it confused Rutherford, and it's confused every researcher since. And it's when we know how the car, you know, if you see a car in a ditch and you want to get that car out of the ditch, it helps to know how the car got into the ditch in the first place.
Right.
Now, we're in a mess. We're in a pickle, and we have to go back and say, how did we get in this pickle in the first place? And although Ernest Rutherford did all he could in his day, just like Isaac Newton did all he could in his day, he overlooked one or two very, very fundamental and simple things that actually happened. Going back to Rutherford, he suggested that an atom was made up of a positive particle, for example, hydrogen, mm-hmm. and orbiting the middle of the atom was a negative particle, which he called an electron. And he pictured this in his mind as a little red billiard ball or a pool ball, a snooker ball.
Yeah.
That was the positive charge in the middle. And that was like the Earth. And the electron which orbited the atom was like the moon going around the Earth. And this is how he could see it in his mind, because there was no computers, there was no televisions, but he knew that when he looked up at the moon, it affected the tides, and he knew the moon went around the Earth as the Earth spins on its axis. So the Earth is spinning on its own axis. And so he figured, well, perhaps, Ernest Rutherford decided, perhaps the atom was like the Earth, it was a particle that spins on its axis, and perhaps the electron which orbits, which he discovered was orbiting the atom, was like the moon. So we had a positive particle in the middle and a negative particle orbiting in it.